Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening. Check out Charity Mobile and prayerfully consider making them your wireless carrier. Mention offer code Patrick and get a free phone. Go to charitymobile.com.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Hey, welcome back. Thanks for listening. Where'd the music go, Cyrus?
I was just seeing if I could throw you off.
You did. Man, you're messing with my mind today.
I'm going to give you nightmares. I want you looking over your shoulders.
And you still don't have the Maggie song ready, do you?
Maybe I do. Maybe I do.
Well, I will call upon that soon enough. Okay. Queensland, Australia. There was a terrible shooting involving some police officers who were shot. And the chief, I think she's like the police commissioner. She's going to give a speech. And after her speech, this is on secular national Australian news, and Australia is very, very secular, let me tell you. So the police minister, Mark Ryan, he gets up to address the media after the police commissioner has given her speech addressing the shooting, etc. Here's what he said.
This would be the part of the show where you press the button
and it plays the audio. That is
that part, and it's not playing.
Cyrus.
Come back to this, please.
We'll have to have a meeting after the show to discuss.
Maybe I'm in Christmas mode, I think.
I think so.
Okay, it's not vacation yet.
Okay, how about this? Cyrus. Since we can't play that audio, could we play the winter weather warning audio? Is that available? The travel chaos video? Audio?
Yes.
Okay, Cyrus.
Coming through in the clutch.
You're 1 for 3. Let's try it.
Multiple U.S. airlines are issuing travel waivers ahead of the winter blizzards that are forecast for the Midwest. A potential bomb cyclone that is set to hit the Northeast later this week. CNN's meteorologist Jennifer Gray is in the Weather Center. Jennifer, if you've got a flight booked, what should you know about this?
Well, if you're in the upper Midwest and northern plains, you might want to be thinking about changing that because the weather is about to really get rough across those areas. The storm system right now is just in its infancy, but it will be expanding. It will be definitely strengthening over the coming days. We have winter weather advisories, winter storm watches out across much of the northern plains, the northern Rockies. Here we go. As we get into Thursday morning, we're going to start seeing blizzard conditions across portions of Minnesota. Chicago could experience blizzard conditions. This is Friday morning, so Thursday night into Friday is really the rough timestamp for Chicago. We could see up to a foot of snow across portions of the Midwest, even the northern plains picking up quite a bit of snow. And this snow dives very far to the south, touching even portions of Arkansas. And those wind chills, Caitlin, will be anywhere from 40 to 50 degrees below zero across portions of the plains in the Midwest.
Yay,
just in time for Christmas. Well, that's real news. That's real-time news, came out this morning courtesy of CNN. So I just wanted to pop it out there because it affects most of the country. And if you heard the part about, you know, maybe you want to revise your travel plans, I think that's a smart thing to do, or at least consider, just because apparently from what I'm seeing, they're saying that this could be like the worst thing people have seen by way of snow and cold in many decades. Hope it doesn't happen that way, but it could. So be aware. So Cyrus, that story from Queensland, Australia, do you by chance have that audio?
Well, of course I do.
Oh, I'm happily surprised. So just to set it up again, this took place in Queensland, in Australia, and as you may know, Australia is a very secular place. The police commissioner has just finished giving her briefing to the media about a shooting that involved two police officers getting shot. And I guess he's like a chaplain, Mark Ryan. He gets up to address the media, and here's what he says.
Well, again, the hearts of Queenslanders break. They break again tonight. This is a tragedy on so many levels. and the thoughts of all of us are with the police family tonight. This is a traumatic, confronting, and devastating event for our community. The Queensland Police Service has lost two heroes tonight, and I express my sincere condolences to their family, friends, and colleagues, and the entire police family. These officers serve with honour, and we will always remember their sacrifice in service of our community. I know these days that not many people are religious, but I thought some people get consolation in prayer. There is a patron saint for police. It is Saint Michael the Archangel. And this is a prayer to Saint Michael the Archangel. Saint Michael the Archangel, defend us in our battle. Be our protection against the wickedness and snares of the devil. May God rebuke him, we humbly pray. And do thou, O Prince of the heavenly host, by the power of God, cast into hell Satan and all of the evil spirits who wander through the world, seeking the ruin of souls. Amen. Saint Michael the Archangel, pray for us, pray for all police.
Amen, brother. That's cool. I really like that. And when I saw it, I thought, I want to share that with you. Because just think, that went out over the secular TV airwaves all over that country. I mean, boy, they could sure use the St. Michael the Archangel prayer down there. And I think we can too, maybe to even a greater degree. So that's it. I just wanted you to see that or hear that. It was cool. What did you think, Cyrus?
What would happen if that happened here, and a public official said a prayer like that on
disbelief, shock, consternation? Somebody would be frantically trying to find the mute button. I have a feeling that's the reaction that you would get largely. But what a beautiful thing that would be if, imagine if on CNN or some big national network, if somebody did that and just said, I want to share a prayer. I bet they would mute it. They couldn't take it. But what a beautiful thing that would be. So Cyrus, the next time you're interviewed on CNN, why don't you have that prayer handy?
You can count on it.
And just pray it.
Yep, I will. The very next time.
Yeah, the next time you get invited on CNN. Or, I mean, for that matter, if you ever get on MSNBC or Fox News or whatever any of them are, you know, when you're doing your media appearances, please remember to do that.
You can count on me, good buddy.
Thank you. If I can't count on you to have the audio ready when I need it, at least I can count on you for this.
That hurts.
Okay, one more Australia story, and then we're done with Australia. This has to do with social credit being introduced for their citizens there. They're going to tell you the specifics here. For your digital ID being necessary to access the internet. So remember the whole social credit score thing that's going on in China right now, where people have a social credit rating and they can do or not do certain things depending upon how high or low their score is. And if your score is low enough, you can't buy a plane ticket or a train ticket, or you can't shop in certain stores, or you can't rent something if your social credit rating is too low. And that, of course, gets to the issue of the government wanting to control your behavior. If you're religious and you go to church, your social credit rating is lower. If you are not necessarily religious, but if you are related to people who are religious and you didn't narc on them, your social credit rating will be lowered. So this is now starting to pop up in other places. Here's an example from Australia. And this is, I'll have to see what the source for this is, but here goes.
A radical plan to crack down on social media abuse is being considered by the federal government. For more, Nine's Oliver Haig joins us live in Adelaide. Ollie, how will it work?
Lila, good morning. Essentially, it will work the same as a passport. Australians forced to submit 100 points of identification, like their driver's licence or passport, when using social media accounts like Facebook and Twitter. Now, police would have access to those social media accounts, and it's all part of a crackdown on online abuse. Now, users could be liable for defamation suits or even criminal prosecution. And it's all part of a plan hoping to deter people from engaging in bad behaviour. Now, the recommendations were handed down by a federal parliamentary inquiry. They're reforms that are being considered by the Morrison government, with the chairman saying there is merit to remove the veil of being anonymous.
And that's, I'm told, from the Today Show in Australia. So just be aware, these things are creeping up on us. And Cyrus, how do you like the idea of having to provide your 100 points of identity documentation just to be able to post something on Facebook?
I don't like it at all. And it's something that's just, it's on the horizon. And it's like a wave that I can see off in the distance. And right now there's no danger. You know, it's like, oh, it's mm-hmm. that's a tomorrow problem. But
that's down in Australia.
Right. But that wave is mm-hmm. getting bigger and bigger, and it will be on us any minute.
Yeah. So not to doom and gloom anybody, but just, you know, forewarned is forearmed. And it's smart to be, as Jesus says, to watch the signs of the times, to be aware, look around, keep your head up, pay attention to what's going on. And he also says to be as wise as serpents and as harmless as doves. So maybe thinking about things like that will affect how you make decisions about what kind of, I don't know, electronics you buy, or what kind of communication devices you buy. And what I mean by that, I'm not being coy or I'm not trying to be opaque here, but maybe you realize that you want to go maybe to a dumb phone instead of a smartphone, or maybe you want to make adjustments on what you post on social media, or if you post anything at all. These are all decisions that, as this kind of oversight and intrusion into our privacy becomes more pronounced, it will dictate how people decide to do or not do those things, I think, anyway. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Esmeralda, waiting patiently in Sacramento. Good morning, Esmeralda. Did you feel the 6.4 earthquake this morning at 2:30?
No, I didn't. At least I don't think I did. I was asleep.
Good for you. Yeah. Okay.
Thank you for taking my call, Patrick. My 11-year-old daughter has, we listen to you in the mornings, and she loves your show. And she asks a lot of questions. And with this one, I'm not sure if I, she's not understanding how I'm explaining it to her. So she has Christian friends and Jewish friends. And she's asked me, how are we Christian, but we're Catholic? And I told her a Christian is somebody who believes in Jesus Christ, and our religion mm-hmm. is Catholic. And she says, how is ours? How do we know that ours is the true church? And I told her because Jesus created it, and then other people didn't like what was being taught, so that they started creating their own religions. But she's still not understanding that. So I want to see if there's any suggestions that you can give me on that, on how to explain it to her. And then second, Jesus was Jewish, so why aren't we Jewish? And I don't know how to answer that.
Okay, yeah, two great questions. So let's start this way. So she's 11 years old. We can't give, you know, tedious detail to an 11-year-old because it probably would be too much for her. So maybe you could try this way. You can say, okay, honey, we know, and you can show her in the Bible, the passages in Matthew's gospel, for example, where Jesus says, like in Matthew chapter 5, you are the light of the world. No one lights a lamp and sets it under a basket, but rather it is put on a stand where it gives light to everybody in the room. You are like a city set on a hill. And if you know, in Sacramento, if you go east, you come to the Sierra Mountains. Now, I can't think of any cities that you'd be able to see from the valley floor, but imagine if there were a city up on one of those mountain peaks. You'd be able to see it from a great distance, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So the point here is to point out to her that Jesus is speaking not only to us individually as Christians, but he's also speaking about this church that he established. And he's saying it's visible. You can see it. You can find it. Now, just make that point to her, that this church that Christ established, upon this rock I will build my church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. That's Matthew 16. This church Jesus established is findable. It's recognizable. Now, it doesn't mean that people will necessarily like it or agree with it or enter into it, but at least they know what it is. So that's the first point. This church is visible. And then point out that this church is, according to Jesus, has an authority that's given by him to preach and to teach. So we see that in Matthew chapter 28, verses 19 and 20, where he tells the apostles, go into the whole world, make disciples of all nations, baptizing them in the name of the Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit, teaching them to observe all that I have commanded you. And behold, I am with you always, even until the end of the age. And that literally means until the end of time, until the end of the world, when Jesus comes back. So there are some clues there in Matthew 16 and also in Matthew 28 that this church that he established is for all people in all places at all times. And the doorway into the church, you might say, is through the sacrament of baptism. And this church has an authority given by Jesus to teach. So we see some clues from Jesus about the nature of this church. We also see, as Jesus says, that the church, he refers to the kingdom of heaven, and in this sense he's referring to the church, is like a mustard seed. And, you know, a mustard seed is a little tiny speck when it's at that stage. But he says it's going to become like a big tree. So one of the other things to point out to her is that this church that Jesus established, that we read about in the book of Acts and the other epistles in the New Testament, in the Gospels, it's in its infancy form. It's like the mustard seed. So it looks like it would in its infancy, but Jesus says it's going to grow and get really big. It's not going to look the same in its mature form. It's going to look like a tree, but it's the same organism. That's important because you want her to see that in the New Testament, you don't see anybody called Archbishop. You don't see Pope Mobiles or Vatican City State or Advent wreaths or any of those other things. But those are external characteristics of the church that develop over time. But it's the same church today as it was in its infancy. And then lastly, you could point out to her, well, how can we know that that is the Catholic Church? Well, let's do a thought experiment. The church is visible. It has certain distinctive qualities. It has the faith, the true religion that Jesus established, the true church that he established, is Catholic by nature. And we can see that it has these distinctive characteristics. So even just in the structure of the church, we see that it has a hierarchy. There is the Pope, the bishops, the priests. Now, it's not to say that the lay people are at the bottom, but if we want to think of it in that sense, that's one way to look at it. Or you could say the church is comprised of lay people who are ministered to by priests and bishops and deacons, etc. So the structure of the church is visible, and the teachings of the church that are peculiarly Catholic, like the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist, honoring Mary and the saints, and all of the above, that too is part of the church's visibility. You can see it. You can know it by its doctrines. So tell all this to your daughter, and then perform this thought experiment. Let's go backward in time from the present day. Jesus said that his church would exist until the end of the world, okay? It hasn't come yet, so we don't know how far in the future that will be, but we can go backward in time. So from the present day, we can say, okay, look, we can see the Catholic Church, all of those visible characteristics that I just mentioned. You can see them. People don't necessarily agree with it or like it, but they know what it is. They know what the Catholic Church is, whether they agree or disagree. But there are many other groups who claim to be the truest expression of Christianity. So the Mormons claim that, Jehovah's Witnesses claim that, Calvary Chapel claims that, Good Book Baptist claims that, all of the various Christian and quasi-Christian or even non-Christian but still Christian-sounding groups, they all claim to be the true religion. And so which one is? So let's go back in time. Let's go back, I don't know, let's go back 250 years. So 250 years ago, suddenly now you can't find Mormonism. There were no Mormons. There were no Jehovah's Witnesses. There were no Seventh-day Adventists. There were no Christian Scientists. There was no Calvary Chapel. All those groups vanished because the men, and in some cases women, who started those groups had not yet been born. So those religions came into existence in the case of those, except for Calvary Chapel, came into existence in the 19th century. Let's go back further. Let's go back another 250, 300 years. So now we are in the late 1400s. And guess what? You know, there's the Catholic Church. You can see it. You can see the Pope and the bishops and the people and the teachings and the Holy Eucharist and all of that. But guess what you won't find? You won't find Lutherans or Baptists or Calvinists or any of these various groups that arose at the time of the Reformation, because the men who would start those religious movements had not yet been born, or at least they were still Catholic. Now let's move further back. Let's go back another 500 years. So now you're in like the 9th century, and what do you find? Well, you find the Catholic Church, the Pope, the bishops, the lay people, all the saints and all the sinners and all the sacraments and honoring Mary and celebrating Mass. The Catholic Church is certainly there. None of those other groups that we think of today as maybe having a claim on being the true church, none of those groups are present because they didn't exist yet. And then if you go back century by century, Esmeralda, go all the way back to the very first century when the apostles are still alive, what you will find is the Catholic Church is there at every step, and it is called the Catholic Church by the end of the first century, beginning of the second century. The earliest example we have is from St. Ignatius of Antioch, who in the year 107, in writing letters to various churches he passed through on his way to Rome to be martyred, he's referring to the Catholic Church. And he learned the faith from St. John the Apostle. And he talks, among other things, about the real presence of Christ in the Eucharist in referring to the Catholic Church. So my point is this. I got to take a break, so I have to leave it at this. If you perform this thought experiment with your daughter, show her the Catholic Church is present and accounted for with documented historical evidence all the way back to the time of the apostles. And none of these other groups are. They vanish the further back in time you go. So say, okay, here is just one example of the evidence that shows that the Catholic Church is the church established by Jesus. Now, I'm over time, overdue for a break, so forgive me. I'll have to leave it at that. But try that on for size. Talk to her about it. Or maybe you can even play this part of the show for her and see what she thinks. And I'm here to help. If I can help in the future, just give me a call. Be right back. Hi, Patrick Madrid here. Thanks for listening to my podcast. In today's crazy world, finding companies that align with your Catholic values is a challenge. Your choice of cell phone provider matters. Cyrus and I switched to Charity Mobile, and you should too. Enjoy excellent coverage on America's most reliable network while supporting a pro-life, pro-family company. Use offer code Patrick for a free phone. Don't miss out. Act now at charitymobile.com. Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help with this year's health insurance open enrollment. They offer individual, couple, and family options to best fit your needs. Before January 15th, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Cha-cha-cha. Taco Tuesday, coinciding with nearly the end of the Advent season, getting close to Christmas. I wish you and your family many Christmas blessings. The number is 888-914-9149. I have a note here from Gina. She says, I volunteered at an adult daycare center for 3 years. There were people with Alzheimer's from beginning stage until they became physically mean. I learned so much. They were all different, just like we are. Some happy, some sad, some angry. I loved every one of them. As a volunteer, I could just spend time with them and laugh, listen to them, help them, laugh with them, by the way, listen to them, help them with games and crafts. They brought me joy and sorrow at the same time. I also spent time talking to their families. One lady, I was told, was a prayer warrior. She was happy most of the time. She would see my crucifix and it would bring her joy. She was Catholic, so I would talk to her about the Catholic faith. I would say a short prayer with her. She didn't say much more than a few words, but it would make her happy. Another lady went to the same church as me. She liked to talk about when our priest came over and spent time with her husband. When I saw her at church, she would get a big smile and wave. This was such a blessed time for me. We had to move out of town for my husband's job. Then the virus came. Thanks for all you do. Well, thank you for sharing that, Gina. And I can easily imagine how that experience was a blessing for you to have an opportunity to interact with people. For my part, since we're sharing, I'll just mention that I had the occasion when I was in college and I was going to a community college and, you know, going part-time. I didn't have the funds to go to like a four-year school. So I was just kind of working my way through the lower level stuff. And I had a job as an orderly at it was more than a retirement home or a convalescent home, I should say, because there were medical people on staff there. So they had at least a couple of RNs on staff. And I think there was a physician who, although maybe he wasn't there full time, he was there a lot to look after patients. So it was like a step higher, I guess, than like a convalescent center. And so this place was filled with primarily elderly people who had had strokes or they had some other incapacitating illness, and so they needed long-term care. And so I was an orderly I worked at this job for maybe no more than 6 months, maybe a little bit less than that, but let's say 6 months. And I was the lowest rung on the ladder in terms of the duties that I had to do. So I changed bedpans and I changed colostomy bags and I had to do, you know, the really menial work. And I got, you know, I got paid $2.85 an hour or whatever it was. It wasn't much. But it was one of the best jobs I ever had. It was gross in some ways. It was stinky in some ways. It was unpleasant in some ways, like the time that I was told, well, Mr. Smith died this morning as I was starting my shift, and I was told by the RN, you need to go in there and clean his body up before the mortuary van shows up. And I had never seen a dead body, much less touched one. And I said, why do I have to do it? She said, because you're the orderly. That's your job. That's what you do. I said, what do I have to do? She said, well, I'll put it this way. When a person dies, the body completely relaxes. I mean, all the muscles, they go, you know, limp. They don't, there's no longer any control of any of the muscles. And that will inevitably result in some mess that has to be cleaned up. And so that was another example. I had to deal with a dead body, and I just had to do it. And I wasn't freaked out by it, but it was weird. But I learned a lot. You know, I'm not even talking about the dead bodies per se, but I learned a lot about aging and people who are elderly and lonely. I remember one guy confided in me. A lot of these people confided in me. That was part of probably one of the biggest things for me in terms of a blessing was to interact with people who were 60, 70 years older than me in some cases and hear from. These are people like who were born, because this would have been, let's say, 1979, thereabouts. So some of these people were born, you know, well into the 19th century. And to hear stories from them. But I remember one guy who was, he probably wasn't very old. I mean, he might have been in his mid to late 50s, perhaps. That doesn't seem old to me. And he was contorted because of a stroke that he wasn't aphasic. He could still speak, but he couldn't dress himself or get up and do anything because the stroke had so badly affected him that he was confined to a wheelchair. He needed help eating, couldn't dress himself, et cetera, et cetera. And his wife would come in from time to time when I was there taking care of him, and she was really pretty. I mean, very well-dressed, very pretty, very attractive woman. And she seemed really nice. And then he began to confide in me over time, and he says, you know, it just really, is very painful for me and very lonely for me because, you know, I love my wife and we had a wonderful marriage, but I got stricken by this stroke and now I'm stuck here. I can't go anywhere. I can't do anything. And when she comes in and she's all decked out and beautiful and all that, he says, I can't help but thinking about what's going on in her life when she's not here visiting me. And I guess if your thoughts run away with you and you feel, you know what I'm saying? My point is, he was suffering greatly because of that. And he shared that with me. And I wasn't sure what I should, I mean, I didn't know what to tell him. And other people, there was one guy, I'll never forget him. His name was Wilford. And he was as old as the hills. I mean, he must have been well into his 90s, probably close to 100. And when he came into my wing on this medical convalescent center, he was out of it. He was not conscious. He was he would lie in bed and kind of fidget or kind of move around. So they had these restraints on his hands and his feet so that he wouldn't accidentally fall out or anything. So my job was to change his colostomy bag and to, you know, tend to him and make sure he was okay. But there was no conversation because he was not conscious. Well, over time, he became conscious and he got to the point where he could talk to me and I could talk to him. And so over the ensuing few months, we kind of, I wouldn't say struck up a friendship, but it was a very friendly kind of interaction. And he would kind of light up when I would come into the room and so on and so forth. Well, eventually, Wilford died. And his wife, Maud, who was there to visit him quite often, I got to know her a little bit. And she told me after her husband died, she invited me to his funeral and she told me, she said, you know, you personally became his friend. You were like his guardian angel. And I said, what? She said, you were like the bright spot in his otherwise dreary life because he was in this place and he had nothing else to do. He had nothing going for him. And many of the other nurses, I guess, or others, they wouldn't bother with the human dimension of dealing with their patients. They would just, you know, do the things that they needed to do, but they wouldn't really talk to them or befriend them. And so she said, he was so happy that you were like a friend to him. And I kind of became a friend of hers. So I'm like, you know, I'm like 19 years old at the time, and she's like 98 years old. And she invited me to her home one time. I think it was dinner or something, but she was just very kind to me. And it was because she felt that at the end of her husband's life, somebody else had been kind to him. And eventually she too, you know, went to her eternal reward. So I don't really know what all happened there, but I do know that for me personally, those experiences of being around people who were ill, lonely, elderly, lots of problems physically, all of the above, it really helped me to understand at a deeper level, probably better than I ever would have if I hadn't had that experience. It helped me to understand and maybe grow in the area of compassion and empathy. And you know how it is, you know, you're young and you're healthy and you're active and you're doing all these things and you're out and about. It's easy to forget about the people who are not any of those things and who are indeed stuck in a body that no longer works. I hate to put it that way, but for some of them, that's how it felt. Or to be forgotten by family and friends. The life has passed them by and they're stuck in a room somewhere and somebody has to feed them and dress them and everybody else is living their lives. I mean, that kind of loneliness and the need for human compassion and interaction was really impressed upon me. And I'll leave it at that. I just want to share this in response to the email that I just read. And I'll give you this bit of advice, all of you, any of you who are ever listening, look for opportunities to have those kinds of experiences because it will change you for the better. It will make you a better person. It'll give you insight and dare I say wisdom even. I don't think I had wisdom in those days, but I think it transformed eventually into some sort of wisdom where you can be a better follower of Jesus and be more effective in showing the love of Jesus to people all around you in ways that maybe you wouldn't be able to do if you didn't have those experiences. The kind of experiences that will make you uncomfortable. The kind of experiences that will get you out of your comfort zone, just like I was. Go wash that dead body, you know, very uncomfortable. But I learned. So I share that with you. We'll take a break. I'll come back to your phone calls. The number is 888-914-9149. This is the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app. Our sponsor, the Catholic Order of Foresters, is here to help with this year's health insurance open enrollment. They offer individual, couple, and family options to best fit your needs. Before January 15th, visit relevantradio.com/forester.
Compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Let's go to Tina now, waiting patiently in Long Beach. Good morning, Tina.
Yeah, I got a lot of work done. I have the phone on speaker. Anyway, what I want to say is that, first of all, real quick before I start, what I called about, you were talking about the cable networks. I think my phone's going to go out. You're talking about the cable networks not being irreligious. Well, when Fox News had their tree lighting ceremony at Fox Square in New York, they had Cardinal Dolan say a prayer. They did a second year in a row. Then they had a minister, and then they had a rabbi. So that is the only network that would do that, I think. So I just wanted to say that. But what I'm really calling about is Cyrus had a letter from a woman who said that that she felt like she was nagging, to God when she was talking to him, asking him for the same thing. Mm-hmm. In my little humble opinion, I think that talking to God, when you're alone, even loudly, if you're alone in the house or wherever, and then in your mind, when you're driving or when people are around asking him to help you in a certain circumstance or just talking to him as a friend, you can never nag to a God who created you and loves you. And I think that sometimes he won't answer if you're praying for someone ill that you want to get well or someone to change who's an alcoholic, something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, he has his ways and his time, and no matter what, he said, in this world, you're going to have tribulation, you're going to suffer, and he can't, just automatically, it's just prayer, I think, is just conversing with a loving God as you would to a parent, and that...
Right. I agree with you. I don't disagree. The nagging part, the lady who wrote the email that Cyrus read, she used that term nagging. And I guess she was wondering if maybe God would take it that way. And of course, God doesn't. God delights in our persistent prayer. And what did Jesus say? When you pray like this, our Father, Abba, Father. Jesus would use the word Abba for father or dad or daddy, you know, that kind of intimate relationship between a son or daughter and the father is certainly, and that's what I hear you saying, Tina, that we should approach God with that.
Absolutely. And I just want to say, Patrick, you're a screener. As I told him, I want to hug him. Actually, I like to hug Cyrus and you, the three nicest guys, and you sound like you're having so much fun. And
thank you.
It just really, really, really nice. Anyway, that's all I wanted to say. Talk to God as to a friend.
Indeed. Well, when you talk to God next, Tina, please mention my name. And Cyrus's and Young Thomas's as well. We would sure and all of us here at Relevant Radio, of course, we would sure appreciate your prayers on our behalf.
Do you know, I have mentioned your name, not Cyrus or Thomas's, but I will. But I have mentioned yours in prayer.
Thank you. Thank you. Well, I figure if I come up in conversation with God often enough, then I'll make more progress toward holiness. Thank you. Appreciate it, Tina. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Don in Northern California. Good morning, Don.
Good morning, Patrick. You were talking about the churches and how short they had been around. Before I came Catholic, I just recently came Catholic, for decades I would say, well, you know, governments come and go, and they, you know, they... but the Catholic Church has been around for 2,000 years. And I go, why is that? The governments basically demand contributions. You were required for a contribution. The church doesn't. And Jesus never forced anybody to do something. And all these governments force people to do things. We're going to do it for the good of the people, or going to do it for this or that. And it seems to me that all these governments are made by people and not by God. Where the church is made by God. But we sit here and we vote to force our fellow citizens to do things. And all this voting in democracy is about the use of force for the majority forces the minority. And that's not really a nice thing.
Well, here's a thought, though. Remember this, Don, that the political sphere, you know, the social order, the secular side of reality, is important and necessary because this is the world in which we live in. So, as you know, Jesus said, you know, my kingdom is not of this world. So there's an otherworldliness about the kingdom and the church. But at the same time, we're rooted firmly in human institutions, government, etc. So it's not that those things are bad per se, and even compulsion for, let's say, paying taxes, as an example, even that's not evil per se. It's necessary according to human society. Of course, it can become tyrannical or oppressive or totalitarian, and maybe that's what you're kind of referring to. I grant that completely. But in itself, though, these human institutions are not evil unto themselves, and they're necessary for us to live in an orderly way. Every time I go by, at night, for example, and I see a highway patrol officer or a police officer who's pulled somebody over to give a ticket, and it's dark out, and maybe it's a really out-of-the-way place, I always say a little prayer for that police officer, and I always say, I'm so glad you're doing this to keep me safe. You're doing this to keep all the rest of us safe. There's an important role for that. So I hope I'm not misreading your point, Don. I just want to say that those things are necessary in themselves, but they can be put to bad use. And I think that's, if I hear you correctly, that's the point you're making. Is that right?
They always evolve into something worse. I mean, that's been history. That's what happens. And I keep praying, you know, how do we stop this? How do we treat other people like we would want to be treated?
Yeah, you know, I guess it's that age-old story. We just can't seem to get it right. Every generation has this problem.
We think we've got it right. Oh, yes, we know better than the last generation, and we don't.
That's true. Human nature stays the same, whether it's 10,000 years ago or today. Our amenities change and our scientific knowledge has increased, but we're still the same sinful creatures that human beings have always been. That's true.
Yes. Thank you.
Well, Don, you know, there's a great book. Maybe you've read it. It's called The City of God by St. Augustine. And he actually analyzes this very issue that you're bringing up along many different salient points. But that whole book, and it's a long book, it's his analysis of the problem that you're describing. Now, there's much more involved, but fundamentally he's looking at the secular order versus the divine order and how the two interact. Right. It's fascinating.
Good. I will read that.
I think you'll like it. I liked it a lot. Well, thank you, Don.
Thank you, Patrick. All right.
Appreciate the call. 888-914-9149. Cyrus, this came in a while back, but I want to share it. It's from Eric, and he's listening in St. Petersburg. Shout out, Eric. He says, this has to do with his conversion to the Catholic Church. He says, Dear Patrick and Cyrus, I want to thank you, he says, for your influence upon my life. Since arriving in Florida last summer to be near my super elderly father and to attempt to rebuild my life after losing job, career, friends over the pandemic controversy, I happened upon Relevant Radio while driving in my car here. Just before the start of last Advent season, I got in touch with the Relevant Radio website saying, how do I become a Catholic? And also leaving a message or two mentioning your program, this program, as being particularly influential to me. The answer was, contact your local church and RCIA program. So I did. Happily, my church is near me, only 8 blocks away. It's the only Catholic parish in his town, which is a suburb of St. Petersburg. The lady who's in charge of RCIA turned out to be in the choir and hearing of my lifelong musicianship. He's a violinist and a singer. She recruited me to join the choir. Thus, from Advent start to the present, I've been singing there with a violin by my side, with which I grace one or two of the songs with an improvised decoration. I'd played electric violin in worship bands at Protestant churches for a number of years before losing my zeal for that church and, in fact, losing my faith entirely in 2020. Suffice to say, I received my bumper sticker, and he includes a picture of his bumper sticker. Thank you for that. And as of when he wrote this email a while ago, he says, and I'm awaiting my brown scapular. I was baptized and confirmed on Easter Vigil of this year. It was the happiest day of my life thus far. I've completed a Marian consecration. And of course, I've already become a devotee of the Divine Mercy Chaplet and Memorare from listening so frequently to Relevant Radio. I appreciate your willingness to broach controversial subjects and the humor between you and Cyrus. May God bless you and Relevant Radio. That's from Eric. Thank you, Eric. That's awesome. Welcome home, first of all, to the Catholic Church. So great to have you here. I'm so happy to hear that your parish is welcoming to you and has given you the red carpet treatment. That's a great parish. So, and thank you for taking time to share how listening to Relevant Radio was instrumental in your life. Thank you for that.
That's incredible.
It just never gets old, Cyrus.
I love it. Here, I have one. Dear Patrick,
okay.
I'm a big fan of the show, and it has helped my faith to grow. I work at an assisted living facility in the activity department. Part of my job is saying the rosary with my residents. One of my residents, who is not Catholic, asked me why we don't say the whole Our Father during the rosary, including mm-hmm. Thine is the power and glory forever and ever. Mm-hmm. I wasn't sure the answer, so I thought I'd ask you. Thank you again so much for all that you do, Chloe.
That's neat. Well, thanks, Chloe. The reason is that the traditional form of the rosary, which includes the Our Father as Jesus gave it in Matthew's Gospel, if you look at the Our Father in Scripture, that doxology that is said at Mass is not part of the Our Father. In fact, you won't even find that in the Bible. It's not a biblical prayer, which in itself is not a problem. There's nothing wrong with the prayer being prayed that's not in the Bible. But the custom in the Catholic Church to pray the Paternoster, the Our Father, it was only at the time of Vatican II that the Mass was changed so that the Our Father then, after a brief interval, included this doxology, for thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory. That was added to try to attract Protestants. That was the stated reason for adding that, because many Protestant denominations were accustomed to saying the Our Father, the Lord's Prayer, and adding that at the end. So for them, it was customary. Catholics, not customary. And so at the revision of the Mass, the new rite of the Mass had this as part of it. And there's nothing wrong with it, don't get me wrong, but it just wasn't part of traditional Catholic prayer. And so for that reason, when you pray the rosary, you're praying the traditional Catholic prayer of the rosary, and the interpolation of that doxology is not present. And that's basically the reason why. If you were to go back to, let's say, the 1950s, no Catholics even knew that doxology, for thine is the kingdom and the power and the glory. Nobody said it, nobody knew it. It's from Vatican II on. I hope that answers the question. Do you have another short one, Cyrus? If not, I do. Oh, better
no.
Get that.
Yeah, you better go.
real quick. Yeah, all the dogs are going crazy. Dear Patrick, this is from Paul in Eureka, California. Is conditional confirmation obligatory as the same time as ceremonies conditional baptism? You know what? There's a little bit more to this, and I better save it. We'll do that tomorrow, because I want to be able to give an answer that makes sense. We'll do that tomorrow. Well, until tomorrow, I will pray for you. Please pray for me and Cyrus and young Thomas and Father Rocky and Drew Mariani and all the rest of us here at Relevant Radio. We sure appreciate your prayers, and we're praying for you too. God bless you. Now.